Today is one of those anniversary days where a number of things come together at the same time. It was on this day, the day we're holding our annual meeting 1 year ago, that Javier and I were first publicly introduced to you, the congregation of St. Paul's. I remember that day vividly, like it was yesterday, and it seems like it was a long time ago. Church packed full of people, glowing faces, lots of high hopes. It was also this week that the first case of COVID-19 was diagnosed in Seattle. And 6 weeks later, that wave broke on the East Coast, New York, Fairfield County, and we know what happened next. It was horrific and tragic. Six of our beloved members of St. Paul's died in 2 weeks. And that began a chapter of life that we're still in now. We are still trying to work out what happened. Our closest ways of connection have been through, in some ways, our physical separation. This relationship through the screen, the few ways we've been able to gather on site. Then there's this third anniversary, our feast of title, the conversion of St. Paul, January 25th. And it's not just a general remembrance of Paul's life. It is specifically remembering his conversion. I think that is a wonderful identity to live under, conversion. And I think it's especially important for us at this time. Paul's conversion is how he found again and deepened his sense of mission and purpose in life. And finding his mission powered him forward, kind of like the Energizer Bunny, shaped the whole Mediterranean world around him, and really shaped the world to our day. We are largely globally influenced in some ways by Paul, in ways he could not have imagined. Paul is telling his story today in the Gospel, in the book of Acts, and it is as dramatic as it can get. Knocked off his horse by blinding light and a voice from heaven. And it supports this picture that we have of Paul never ceasing to move, kind of caroming around the Roman Empire, like the picture that we have in the entryway, the painting of all Paul's journeys crisscrossing. And that's true enough. But there's one really important piece of the story missing. Paul tells it himself, but not here. He tells it in the letter to the Galatians. He says that after this disruptive, life-altering, redirecting encounter, this experience, this thing that happened to him, he goes into the Sinai Desert and disappears for 14 years. 14 years later, he comes to Jerusalem. What happened during that time? We don't know. He never says. Except that we do know. Because it's kind of like breathing. You inhale and then you exhale. This is the second half of his conversion. This is Paul making sense of what happened. First, this radical reorientation. The next time of reflection, transition, discovery, discernment before action. And that's where we find ourselves. This has been and continues to be, not just for us, but for everyone, really on the planet, a deeply traumatic and transitional chapter. It's reshaping our community, our nation, and our world. The last 9 months, we've lived in relative isolation. And we have lived with the insecurity of our health every single day against a deadly disease that we cannot control, even though it's really our behavior, because it is controllable. And many of us have lived with financial insecurity. We've lived with also a level of political upheaval and civic unrest that we've not seen for generations. It feels almost overwhelming. But almost, not quite. It is not overwhelming. Here we are. And breakdown and breakthrough are two sides of the same coin. As I said in my first sermon here, which was the Feast of the Presentation, February 2nd, a year ago, that we, just like Paul, are on a pilgrimage together. And pilgrimage is initiated by a disruptive event. It can be chosen or not. But that disruption or displacement leads to discovery, which leads to the destination, or even larger than that, destiny. So as we arrive at this place this morning, battered, we are also holding some precious gifts of discovery. We're going to carry them forward on our way into these new times, whatever they are. And these gifts of discovery are going to take some time to unpack, to see what they really are and how they work and how they've affected us, just like St. Paul in the Sinai Desert. And we're going to come back together and combine all our individual experiences and discoveries. And as we do, we will need to give some careful time and attention and focus to reflect on what happened and what it means. So, let's start today. Our wardens, Ann Watkins and Terry Polly, are going to be talking in more detail this afternoon when we gather for our annual meeting, sharing in greater detail what the year has been and what it looks like going forward as best we can see, looking at our financial picture and looking at our leadership and our common life. So, I want to talk this morning about the foundation that we're standing on and the resources that we have to do the work that is ahead. There's six things that I want to briefly point to. The first is myself, your priest in charge. And by in charge, I don't take that to mean the boss, but rather having received a charge to serve you as your pastor and priest, holding that charge from you. It's a responsibility that I have a specific and particular way of discharging in this 3-year first season of our lives, in this time of transition. When I came to you, the job that I was assigned by the bishop, the diocese, and the vestry was not so much to lead the charge into the bright new future, not yet, but rather to first take a conscious, active, lively pause and guide us in a 3-year extended period of reflection. To take stock after 3 decades of inspired ministry that really grounded this church, resurrected it, gave it its, helped it find and name its DNA, and then to look at the present, where we are now, what we are carrying with us, what we want to set aside, what we want to keep with us, and then from that place to imagine what God is calling us to do and to be in the near and far future. And I'm really excited to engage that conversation, now more than ever. We know more now than we did a year ago, a lot more. And we don't know a lot more now than we did a year ago. There is a kind of a rootedness just in our experience because it's been such intense experience. A little like Paul. And I don't think it's going to take us 14 years to figure out where we're going, but it might take more than 14 months, and that's a good thing, that pause. And it doesn't mean we stop living while we pause, it just means we listen in a particular way. We have already started, of course. Discernment starts the moment we are born into the world, or maybe before, and it doesn't end until our last breath or beyond. We've started by grounding ourselves and opening ourselves disruptively in that kind of apocalyptic epiphany, both at the same time, but rooting ourselves in what I'll call daily prayer, and by that I just mean openness and vulnerability to the moment. And then we've begun to discern. And again, I don't mean anything formal, just this listening to our hearts. What are we really hungry for? What do we need to survive and thrive? Those are important pieces of information that are already resident, largely individual, but in the coming months we will be starting to have conversations even before the pandemic is over. We'll be talking, Vestry and many of us will be talking about how to have those conversations online, on site, whatever we can do to bring that wisdom together. The second resource that we have is a roadmap and a guide. And I'm speaking specifically of the call of the bishop to say, here's the process to move through this transition. And the diocese has partnered us with a consultant. I am really eager to introduce you to Betsy Fisher. She is a friend of mine from previous work that we've done serendipitously. And she is someone I trust and respect deeply. And I think her style will fit us well. She is a free thinker, and she is very focused on mission and making this process our own, making it work for us. That will, as we continue to discuss the wardens and I and the vestry and how to bring her into this conversation, how to have it ourselves when we're somewhat distanced, will be part of our next stage together. One of our great resources. Third, we have a extraordinarily committed vestry. It has been a challenge to work on Zoom and to work at a distance, but it is one that does not lack for passion and for heart. We have an extraordinary vestry slate coming on, being put forward. And part of what's extraordinary is they are so eager to lean into the challenge. That is not something that is making us kind of shiver and draw back, but say, yeah, we're ready for this, let's do this. As you know, the parish has carried for years a considerable budget deficit. And that has worked through the generosity of people kind of pitching in at the end of the year to close it up. But that doesn't leave a cushion for a shortfall or a pandemic. So that cushion is gone. That does mean there's some considerable financial challenges ahead of us, but I am so encouraged to see how the vestry is leaning in to it. And come this afternoon to the annual meeting, you'll hear more about the detail of that and how we'll be addressing it in the year going forward. Fourth, and this is the most important one for sure, we have each other, each one of you. I have seen, as you have seen in this past year, how fragile a democracy is without the active engagement of its citizens. And citizens operating from their core values. This time ahead for us is going to be one of all hands on deck. And I'm not primarily talking about giving more money, although that kind of generosity will help. Really what I'm talking about is us all giving our all, bringing our full selves our gifts, our vulnerabilities, our fears, our passions, our values, our hopes, all of it, all of it. This is the stuff of God. This is the fabric of the beloved community in the making that Martin Luther King Jr. talked so much about. This is, I would say, the most arduous and rewarding part of the pilgrimage. How we live together, day to day, truing that life to our practice, practicing what we preach. And the final two resources that I want to mention are not flesh and blood, but they are still powerful forces. The fifth one is the pandemic itself. And I don't so much mean the virus as much as our response to it. Over and over, I have heard us talk about what we have learned as we have walked through this year. And I'm going to name three things, but I've heard us talk about a lot of things. One, we are more humble. We know better from the gut that we can't control a lot of things in our lives, so many elements, and that there is so much to appreciate in the moment we have been given, and so much to leave to God in the next moment. That is spiritual wisdom. Wisdom and humility often go right together. We are more resilient. I do not mean tough, but flexible. In some ways, it's our vulnerability that creates that resilience, that ability instead of to come face on to say, let's learn a different way. It's finding ways to cope and survive and then even thrive as we're finding this breadth and this depth that we didn't know we had. But it was there, and it is there. That is spiritual maturity. And then third, we are more curious. We're slowly realizing, and it takes a while, that going back to normal is not an option. I mean the big we, globally we're starting to become aware of that. That life lies ahead of us. And that many things are going to look different than they did. And we're slowly gearing up for that adventure. Curiosity is making this discovery that life is here and now, not then and when and there. That God is right here, right now. And that God shows up when we show up. Or rather, we discover God was always there when we show up. When we become curious, open, attentive, vulnerable, like Paul in the Sinai Desert. The last resource I want to name, and there's a lot more that I could, is our core DNA of radical welcome. That is our primary core value, and I would say it is the core value of Jesus and the gospel. I think that in a way this last year's eruption of racist-based violence and civic unrest has revealed something, unveiled something. The corruption of the soul that it creates when it's unaddressed. And it shows just how critical that core value of welcome, of inclusion, of belonging really is. Paul says he discovered this truth in his conversion. When he saw that he was persecuting Jesus by marginalizing others, that he was connected to the very ones he was rejecting. We all have something to learn in this arduous, extended, painful conversation. And we already have this compass needle planted deep within this community. Deep within our hearts. The heart of God includes everyone, no matter who, no matter what. That grounds us. That orients us. That points the way. These are the resources. And now, finally, the foundation. In today's gospel, Jesus says, "I am sending you out as sheep among wolves." Wow. Not what we would have chosen. It's truth in advertising anyway. Not easy times, probably ever, when we're truing ourselves. Then he says something that seems like just the oddest thing. So don't worry. Don't worry about what you will say in the time of decision. And the reason he says don't worry is that it's not you speaking, it's the spirit of your Father, Abba, who will be speaking through you. Which is to say, it's already inside. It's already here. It's already within us. We are already connected to God and in God, whether we know it or not, whether we feel it or not, in any weather. And the only way to benefit from that reality is to relax into it, trust it, try it out, see how it is. This is our foundation. This is our way. God with us, on the journey, God in everyone we meet, God in every situation. And as we deepen this practice, this way of living, we will fulfill our purpose as St. Paul's on the green in Norwalk, Connecticut, and in the world. We will grow brighter as a beacon for those who are lost and looking for a port, looking for a place to belong. We will be a balm to those who are in pain and hurting. We will be salt in the world that gives us the power to speak truth to power. We will be yeast in the rising dough of this new humanity that God is creating in our day. We see it. We already see it. I want to close with the words of a new prophet who has arisen among us, Amanda Gorman, the youth poet laureate who spoke at the president's inauguration this past week. Amanda spoke with simple clarity when she said, "We will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it. If only we're brave enough to be it." Amen. So be it.